Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Rabbi David Rosen, a former chief rabbi of Ireland and today head of interreligious affairs for the American Jewish Committee. Rabbi Rosen, President Trump has declared today a national day of prayer in light of coronavirus, which has already killed thousands around the world and apparently will get worse before getting any better. First of all, might some people see this as a sign of weakness or as a sign that science is not to be trusted?
Certainly not from an authentic Jewish perspective would it be right to see it that way. Indeed, Maimonides declares that one cannot be a truly good God-revering person if one does not appreciate science and indeed see science as the manifestation of the divine presence in the world. So Judaism certainly doesn't see avoiding the scientific responsibilities as desirable. On the contrary, it would be something condemnable, and it would be wrong. Judaism teaches Ein Sumchin al Anes. It would be wrong to sit with one's hands folded and ask for divine intervention and not to do everything physically possible. So everything scientifically, physically possible becomes an obligation. But that doesn't mean that science can deal also with the psychology. And it's here where prayer is of vital importance, both in terms of a sense of social solidarity, care for others, as well as giving us, if you like, the reinvigoration to be able to be conscious and responsible in the way we behave.
You yourself are an ardent and longtime advocate of interfaith outreach. Does prayer bring people together? Can you actually get people of different faiths on the same page when it comes to prayer? After all, it seems that religion is part of what divides us.
Well, everything that distinguishes us can be a source of division or a source of connection. That can have to do with the color of one's skin or the language one speaks, one's own nationality. All these are different aspects of people's identity. They can be used constructively or destructively. Of course, when it's only really true to the most sublime values of a religious heritage, which affirms, of course, the one power behind the cosmos and basically the fact that all human beings are part of, like, God's children, or, in, to use the biblical language, created in the divine image, religion should emphasize that which unites us above those divisions, which are something not to be deplored, but something to be celebrated and respected. So I think that the idea of bringing people together across those divides with a common cause is very important. At the same time, we have to respect those differences, and sometimes that means that there are areas where some groups might find it difficult to pray together with other groups who might use language and terminology that would be problematic for them. So when dealing with areas of interfaith prayer or coming together, if you like, in some liturgical form, one needs to be careful as to choosing language and texts that can resonate with everybody.
You are listening to Rabbi David Rosen, a former chief rabbi of Ireland and today head of interreligious affairs for the American Jewish Committee. How does a religious leader prove or at least make a good argument that God might actually be listening? Or maybe is it just that prayer makes us feel better?
Well, I'm not sure that those two things are not related. Obviously, religion has to use language that can appeal to everyone, no matter what their level, if you like, of abstract comprehension may be. And therefore, as Maimonides again says, the Torah speaks in the language of man. In other words, it uses imagery that is anthropomorphic to describe God because we can't really use anything else. We don't have any other language of communication. But it's really interesting that just this week, well, there's been a special Shabbat in the Jewish liturgical cycle, Shabbat Zachor, where we remember, read the passage from the war against Amalek. And in Exodus, I think 17, it is there that refers to the battle when Moses' hands are held up by his brother Aaron and brother-in-law Hur. Then the children of Israel were victorious in the war. When his hands were failing, before they had lifted them up, the people were being driven back by the Amalekites. And the Mishnah in Tractate Rosh Hashanah asks, what, is it Moses' hand that achieved victory or that determines whether they were beaten? Of course not, says the Mishnah. It's simply the hands directed the gaze of the people so that when they looked heavenwards, they connected themselves to their Father in heaven, and that enabled them to triumph. In other words, our sages explain seemingly, if you like, supernatural phenomenon according to what we would call today religious psychology. And that awareness of the transcendent, the fact that there's something greater than you, that you connect with something outside you and beyond you, that gives people the power to be able often to overcome physical obstacles totally out of proportion to what seems to be feasible. So I think that the real understanding of prayer, incidentally, the Hebrew word, of course, lehitpalel, is a reflexive term. In other words, it's how it impacts upon us, how our relationship to the transcendent is impacted upon by prayer. And praying that gives us a sense of what we need to work for and in these difficult times to be compassionate for those who are afflicted and affected by the pandemic, and not to be totally wrapped up in ourselves, but to be aware of things beyond us and above us, is a very important message for human solidarity and human welfare.
And how, finally, does a religious leader say that terrible things can happen, but that doesn't mean that there's not a God?
This is, of course, an enormous subject for discussion. But the bottom line is that life is not about pleasure. And, of course, it's not about pain either. We don't want painful lives. But having a pleasurable life is not what life is all about. What life is all about is how do you handle that which you confront, whether it be pleasure or whether it be pain. There are many people who, as a result of pleasure and affluence, become degenerate human beings and do not make a constructive contribution. There are others that are able to use their wealth in a constructive way. Similarly, there are those who go through painful episodes and become more compassionate and sensitive human beings, and those who, as a result of pain, become more insular and egocentric. What's really important is to be able to learn the positive, constructive messages from our experience, rather than the question of whether something is pleasurable or painful.
Rabbi David Rosen, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.